Cyclone Nation. You are now tuned to the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast, presented by Mr. B Clothing. And now, here's your host, Chris Williams.
Welcome, everybody, to a new installment of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast here at CycloneFanatic.com. The Mr. B Clothing Podcast down there at 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive. Pop in and tell Timmy Sitzman hello and his cast of characters. I've got to get me a little, going tomorrow, Adam Gray, to get me a tux measurement for Bloom's wedding.
Oh, yeah, that's coming up.
It is. It's coming up in August. It was a little bit inappropriate, I thought, for he and his lovely bride-to-be, Crystal, to schedule their wedding in August. Fall camp has started. A lot of people are into the fall camp thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like if you're in this field, your wedding shouldn't even sniff football or basketball season.
He should know better.
And granted, I'll give him a tip of the hat to not scheduling it during the season. Like, that's tip of the hat.
Yeah.
But you're screwing with fall camp, Bloom.
He is.
And
very selfishly.
Yeah, it's extremely, because, you know, he's got a lot of guys, you know, like John Walters, myself. It won't really impact you, but like we usually are covering fall camp on that Saturday. And damn it, Bloom, you've screwed us.
If Bloom, who you are good buddies with, you were in the wedding, I believe, obviously, because you're getting
Bloom's
finished
like
tux.
My brother.
Yeah. If Bloom were to get married during a football season and you had to miss a home game, would you do it?
I've
heard you say this before.
I did.
I've heard this rant before from you.
Because nobody gives a crap about your wedding if it's during
football season.
And that goes out to any of you listeners, too. Like, you can think that people care and actually want to be there.
Yeah, they don't.
But they don't.
They don't.
No, they don't. And even if, say, Iowa State's on the road, they don't care because they'd rather be watching a game at a bar or
correct
at their house. They don't want to be at your wedding. And I don't care how close you think these people are. Hell, they could even be family. Nobody wants to be at your wedding. Your wedding is only important to you and your bride and the very close people, mom and dad, you know, grandma and grandpa, people that generally don't have a life to care about anything else.
Or the select few people that just don't like football.
Correct. No, I'm just giving Bloom a heart.
But the
August 2nd date is fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm just screwing with him completely. But if Bloom gets married in September, it's a whole different ballgame because nobody wants to be there.
No.
Nobody wants to be there.
And then when your beautiful bride is walking down the aisle,
no
one is looking at her.
Because they're checking their phone.
Their phone. That's what they're on. No one's looking at the bride.
Exactly. No, but so Bloom's getting married. I got to get measured for a tux at Mr. B's tomorrow.
What kind of tux is he going with?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm a little annoyed. They're getting married in a barn.
That's right up your alley, though.
Bloom
isn't it?
Saying the other night, he's I love it.
Yeah.
Bloom's never been in a barn before.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Well, I mean, if you factor in Brent's just life in general, it shouldn't surprise you.
Wow.
I mean, no, he's never been in a barn. So they're getting married in an unair conditioned barn in August in Iowa. And we got to wear, like, full-blown tux with, like, the vest and everything.
I might show up in a tank top.
See, I think it would have been a classy move by the Blooms to just let us do pants, shirt, tie, suspenders. No jacket. No vest. Bam.
It's still a classy look.
Yeah. It's a good, classy look. Yep. I'll even wear a damn top hat. Whatever.
Yeah. No, I think that looks sharp.
I think the bow tie, too.
Obviously.
Yeah, the bow tie. There you go.
You'd be rocking
think we're all going to regret Bloom's decision on the tuxedos later on.
Yeah. But you know what? At that point, you'll probably have about 16 Busch Lights and you won't even care.
Bush Light will just be immersing. You'll just be popping out of my pores.
Oh.
So, anyways, we got that coming up. We got Bloom's bachelor party this weekend.
I know. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
It's going to be a doozy.
You know, you set up the golf teams, or I shouldn't say it. Bloom set up the golf teams.
Bloom set them up.
But you contacted Vegas about the odds of these golf teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my team came in as a second favorites, and I have issues with this, Chris. I mean, I don't even know the other three guys on my team.
Adam,
I just know that I will win.
I had nothing to do with it. I just called my guy Kenny Miller.
Yeah.
He's got some contacts, and you're the underdog. I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to come after Kenny Miller now.
They basically said that my team, they just laughed at me.
I did too, actually, when I saw your team.
Our team's awful.
I mean, you got Carper.
Yeah, it's a bad team.
Yeah.
All right, so Bloom's Bachelor Party coming up on Saturday. Bloom will be back next weekend, and we'll give you a full Bachelor Party recap. Last week's podcast, Adam, you weren't here. It was me and Bloom. We did our mock draft for the Capital City League, which is coming up. That thing, like the, I'm not kidding, the buzz and feedback we got off that was unbelievable. I actually had a Cap City League coach reach out to me wanting, he actually was serious about wanting some help, and I'm like, dude, you don't want my help. Like, we were kidding.
Yeah.
But so then that, we had our Cyclone Radio Network golf outing last Thursday, and it ended the night after all the sponsors and whatnot were gone. It was me, Bloom, Eric Heft, and John Walters sitting around a picnic table having a few cold ones, which they, for some reason, TCI doesn't have Busch Light either. I've been to TCI and Glen Oaks, and neither one of them does, which, you know, the uppity folks out at these country clubs looking down at people like me, but that's beside the point. And Walters and Heft were both quoted saying that my team would throttle Bloom's, and it wouldn't even be close.
Yeah, and I can't disagree.
You think my team would kill Bloom's too?
You know, and Bloom's had a chance to, especially in the bonus round that you guys had a chance to fill in some nice pieces.
Yeah, no.
And he made some just huge mistakes.
Made bad errors.
I mean, it was almost, I was sitting there listening to it, and I always thought Bloom kind of was knowledgeable in the game of basketball.
Yeah.
I completely changed my opinion on Bloom.
He's like the Jerry Jones of basketball general managers with the Capital City League.
Oh, don't be that mean to Jerry. Jerry's not that bad. I mean, so, you know, you already had Clayton Custer, and you had Monte Morris. You had 2 point guards,
yep.
Right? So you weren't going to be drafted.
And I had Alice Cook. He could run the point if
yeah.
I need him to.
I mean, you were stacked at that position. But instead, he drafts Deontay Garrett with his first pick.
Yeah.
He could have taken Royce White and got Deontay in the second round.
Just mind-boggling, wasn't it?
It was just a comedy of errors by Bloom.
Yeah,
and
poor guy.
It's going to show up when the team's playing in the court, and your team mops it by 15-20.
I'm going to do my best to see if we can get the 5-on-5 Iowa State-Iowa State matchup. Now, granted, nobody will be able to see it.
Yeah.
But I want to see if this somehow can get facilitated. Just because I think that my team would really mop the floor with his. I really do.
The only thing, I did like his Nader pick.
That's a great pick. I completely agree with that.
I will like that.
Yeah.
I will admit that.
I love Nader. I got killed because I thought Nader had a good chance to be the Big 12's newcomer of the year.
I agree with you, though.
Yeah.
I do.
All right. So now Gray's on the record, so my team's clearly going to win. Let's stick with basketball, and then we do have some football topics we're going to touch here. On the Mr. B Clothing podcast, Lindy's magazine is out, the preseason magazines. It's that time of year. I know Athlon will be on the newsstands any day. In fact, depending on where you're at, Athlon could be out already. And then you've got Phil Steele coming out. I'm not as fond of Lindy's. Usually, I feel like of all the preseason magazines, they do the I don't know. I'm not going to say they do a bad job because it's informative, it's entertaining, but I don't feel like that's got as much stuff in it. But we'll get to those here momentarily. Before we do, we do want to talk basketball. Is ESPN has this list out of the top 50 coaches in college basketball. Fred Hoiberg is in the top 25. We do know this. They released, well, what was it, 50 through 25 earlier in the week. And I think they are, which is just going like one by one for the rest of the way, right? Is this correct?
Correct.
It's just a genius ploy to gain clicks by ESPN.
During the offseason,
yeah.
Correct.
Clicks during the offseason. And you're the one who really, you know, when I look through here, I noticed that Hoiberg wasn't on it. So my whole deal, I tucked it in the back of my mind. Okay, I'll write about this when Hoiberg is released. I saw the Des Moines Register did something. That's mainly, I think, because Fran McCaffrey was already on there, and then they just threw in that Hoiberg was in the top 25. But so you actually, Adam, you went through this list and you're very adamant about a few things. Though I'll tell you, the first thing that popped out at me was Scott Drew and Baylor being tied at number 50, which I thought was ludicrous. Just, you know, we can make all the jokes we want about Scott Drew and his in-game coaching and whatnot, but you're telling me a guy with what Baylor's done, the turnaround he had at Baylor.
Yep.
And the criteria for this is how they're doing right now.
Yeah.
Correct? But, like, 50? in Waco, Texas? Come on. Like, yeah. I don't understand that. In my opinion, Scott Drew's at least top 40.
Yeah, I'm not even a huge Scott Drew Baylor fan, but this is how ridiculous it is at him at 50. You go one spot lower, Chris, just one spot at 49.
Yep.
Richard Pitino, Minnesota. He's coached 1 year, and what did he do in that 1 year? He took him to the NIT.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
So Scott Drew goes to Sweet 16 at Baylor, and he's ranked lower than Richard Pitino, who went to the NIT at Minnesota. I don't even get me going on Fran McCaffrey being 17 spots higher than Scott Drew.
Baylor went to the Sweet 16.
Yes, and they dunked 100 times in Iowa last year in the NIT.
It's
ridiculous.
I know that doesn't make any sense.
He's got Scott Drew behind these names: Richard Pitino, Stu Morrill from Utah State, Bob Hoffman from Mercer, and I know you're a Georgetown guy, but John Thompson III of Georgetown.
I do love Georgetown, and like I told you before we recorded, like I've been a Georgetown fan since Allen Iverson when I was a kid. Just for the disclosure for the haters out there, and John Thompson should not be in the top 50.
No,
should not be in the top. If you're going right now, he should not be in the top 50.
Here's a name that's not in the top 50: Dana Altman in Oregon. They've had some great teams out there at Oregon. They were, what, a couple possessions away from beating Wisconsin this year in the NCAA tournament. How are these coaches ahead of Dana Altman?
Here's one for you that I found interesting. I think that Rick Barnes is undervalued on this list at number 44, and the reason I say that, we're going right now. I'm just going by ESPN's definition of how they did this. Who did a better coaching job in the Big 12 last year than Rick Barnes? I mean, there was a lot of good coaching jobs in the Big 12, so maybe I didn't frame that right. But, I mean, this is a guy who was going to get fired at this time last year. My money would have been that he's getting canned.
Yes.
He turns it around and now is an outside shot by some, not very many, but some, to win the Big 12 next year with the job that he's done. To me, he's undervalued at 44.
I really like him to be a little bit more defined in his criteria as far as what does right now mean, because obviously it does not mean this last year, because if it is right now, how is Rick Barnes ranked lower than Bruce Weber at Kansas State?
Nah, that's a great point.
It doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't.
I think Ed Cooley at Providence is undervalued at 41. I mean, with the job he did last year taking over, that's one that not many of our listeners will care about.
I think that's fair.
Tubby Smith at 39.
Way too high.
I don't know. Let's read, but they made them respectable. But, I mean, okay. To me, that seems high. I maybe throw him a bone and put him at 50.
Oh, no, no. If you actually read it, he went with a little Kirk Holland here. The Red Raiders jumped from 233rd to 83rd in adjusted efficiency.
What does that mean win-loss-wise? That's what I want to know.
I'm just saying. How
is Buzz Williams ranked 38th at Virginia Tech and he hasn't coached a game there?
Here, you know what? If you're going to do that, why is my boy Bruce Pearl at Auburn not on the list? Bruce Pearl showed he can coach circles around any of these guys in the top, 25.
Here's another one for you, and don't laugh.
Yeah.
But Tad Boyle at 34 in Colorado. That's that job before he took it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think when you factor in where these guys are at, I mean, that's Tim Miles at Nebraska at 32. I'm sorry, BS. That's a top 10 coaching job that he's doing right now. That's a top 10. Do you know how hard it is to win at Nebraska?
Top 10?
Dude.
They didn't even win a tournament game. Stop.
That is a graveyard. No, getting Nebraska to an NCAA tournament is a top 10 coaching
job. Top 10 coaching. So you're telling me right now that Coach K couldn't go from Duke to Nebraska and take him to an NCAA tournament game?
At this age, no.
Oh, you're out of your mind.
At this age, no.
Williams.
He's got the ball rolling right there.
I know
it's
you're a Nebraska guy down there in Clarinda, but you got to just get over it.
Which is the most ludicrous thing that you said, because I'm anything but that. And anybody who knows me knows that. For me to come to Tim Miles' defense here is actually a semi-decent
he's
upset.
He's a great coach, but top 10?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Getting Nebraska to an NCAA tournament game is a huge accomplishment. Well, you're going right now. I'm going by their criteria. Right now, that guy's doing a hell of a job.
Well, then I guess Fran McCaffrey is undervalued then, too, because getting Iowa to NCAA tournament game right now seems like it's a...
Iowa didn't play in the NCAA tournament.
Oh, you're right. I apologize. Well, I mean, look at Fran McCaffrey is ranked ahead of, and Hawkeye fans listening, and I know you guys do listen.
We have a staunch listenership of Iowa fans.
A ton.
We really do.
Yeah. Steve Alford, 36. Fran McCaffrey, 33rd. How? Steve Alford took UCLA Sweet 16. In New Mexico, he had them winning the Mountain West every year.
I'm just playing devil's advocate here, and this has nothing to do with Iowa. The only reason you would put Alford at 36 in his first year like that is because it's UCLA, and traditionally it's a job where you're supposed to be able to win at. That's the same argument we're making with Baylor and Nebraska. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that's a blue blood job of college basketball. Perhaps they thought that he should have gone farther. I don't tend to agree with that. That's his first year.
I just found the worst one on this list.
Okay.
And I think overall career resume wise, you would put him here easily. But right now, the number 30th best coach in college basketball, Bob Huggins.
Oof.
How is Bob Huggins right now ahead of Rick Barnes, ahead of Lon Kruger?
Isn't Bob Huggins about a year from getting fired?
You know, I don't know. I don't know what his relationship is. It is his alma mater, so maybe they give him a little bit more of a leash than he would at other schools. But
I'm just saying, they're losing all their players.
They are. They're losing and they're not winning games. Not enough games.
You're right. That might be the worst one on the list.
I mean, how is Bob Huggins right now 30th? I don't get it.
I like Jim Larrañaga and what he's done at Miami.
I do, too.
I like that at number 28. The rest I don't really have a problem with. But, that's a great point about Huggins. I don't know. It's an interesting – where do you think Hoiberg will be?
I would say probably 15 to 16.
I was going to say 15-ish.
Yeah. I read on the board, too, a lot of people thought he could be top 10. I don't see it yet.
He would have gone past the Sweet 16 this year.
Yeah, although this guy's Eamon Brennan, his criteria.
He's from Iowa.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's an Eastern Iowa guy.
Oh, Eastern Iowa. No wonder. That makes sense.
No, he really is.
Yeah.
I think he's like Bettendorf or something like that.
Muscatine or something.
I think he lives in Chicago.
Okay.
He's usually pretty good. I really like his work.
I don't have a problem with him. I just, the criteria seems all over the map. I mean, you're
now, this guy, wasn't just Eamon who did this. This is like a panel. This wasn't one guy.
It is a panel. Oh, at the very bottom, it just says his name on it. It doesn't say anyone else's name. So
yeah, I
just
believe this is a panel of guys who put this together.
Okay. Well, then I apologize to you, Eamon. I know you're listening.
I'm not. Yeah, this panel has collective intelligence that's greater than any individual member's knowledge and sharper than, yeah. So this is.
I bet you that's why some of the criteria is all over the place, because some people are going off of career resume and other people are going off of lately.
Well, again, I'm saying if we're doing the right now thing.
Yes.
Which is why I'm such an advocate of Tim Miles. You know what I mean? I'm not going off his career resume. I'm going off of what has he done for me lately.
No, but Chris, he made it to the round of 64, and you wanted to be top 10.
But you have to factor in that he's at Nebraska.
I understand that. That's why I'm saying 30th or whatever he's at is pretty fair. I think that's a very fair ranking.
No, not at all.
You're saying top 10, and you
that's
just
a graveyard, dude.
You think Hoiberg should be 15th. You're telling me you think Tim Miles should be ranked ahead of Hoiberg right now?
Yeah, because it's a hell of a lot harder to win in basketball at Nebraska than it is Iowa State. It's been proven over time. So look at the record books.
That is absolutely ludicrous.
I'm going to look up Nebraska's NCAA tournament history for you.
I'll tell you right now how many wins. Zero.
Exactly.
Zero wins.
You just proved my point.
Okay, but just because it's zero wins and he still hasn't won a game doesn't mean you give him credit.
If somebody would show up at Northwestern and take them to the NCAA tournament and win a game, They'd be up there, too.
Northwestern's never been to the NCAA tournament, so they would be doing something at Northwestern that's never been done before. Nebraska's been to the NCAA tournament. They just never won.
How many times, though? Honestly, I don't think that many.
Not very many.
Hold on. Keep talking. I got to get to my computer.
What do you want me to talk about? I mean, I disagree. I think Fred Hoiberg has not only been to the NCAA tournament, he's won an NCAA tournament game every year he's been there. You can't take 10 miles just because he made it to in the Big Ten, which was a good conference. But he made the tournament as, what, like a 9-10 seed and didn't win a game? No, I do not give him as much credit
as
you do.
Okay, Nebraska basketball NCAA tournament results. So they've been to the NCAA tournament.
Like six times?
They've never won a game. They've been there 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 times.
It's 0-7.
Yep. And they hadn't been there since 1998.
Was that like Tyronn Lue?
Cookie Belcher those years?
Yeah.
That job's so hard, though, because you have Creighton. Because all the Nebraska fans, they quit paying attention to you once football's over and they go watch Creighton.
No, let's be fair, too. 10 Miles now has facilities that the coaches before him never
had. Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. But I still think tradition matters more. Iowa State football. I mean, they're going to have great facilities, but that's not going to change the fact that your tradition basically sucks. Just being honest.
Yeah.
Traditionally, Iowa State football isn't any good. It's a lot like Nebraska basketball. And it's the same reason why a coach like Paul Rhodes, when he goes 6-6 at Iowa State, it's a big deal. Where if he would do that at Wisconsin, it wouldn't be.
By your criteria, if Paul Rhodes goes 7-5 this year, you would rank him as a top 10 coach in college football.
No,
based on the same criteria you're giving 10 miles.
Football's different. I mean, you've got to factor in, like, mid majors aren't relevant when it comes to college football.
Okay, so that should only help him.
No, it makes it harder, actually, because you've got, I mean, you're basically just competing against the guys who have more resources than you do. Where in college basketball, it's not. I mean, Iowa State should beat North Carolina Central, right?
Yes.
I mean, they should. But in college, but point is in college football, I mean, you've got like 10 programs that just 10 to 15, the whole SEC. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's more of a.
Well, we're not talking programs, we're talking coaches.
Well, I think a 7-5 record at Iowa State with this schedule should put Paul Rhodes in 10 to 15 category. Absolutely. At Iowa State, traditionally, and I think most people would agree with me. It's a graveyard, man. I mean, it's a lot like Nebraska basketball traditionally when it comes to coaches.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying one season of mediocrity is hard to put a guy in top 10. I mean, Nebraska.
It's done it with Rhodes before. I mean, he went 6-6 a couple of other times, and bam, he's being mentioned for every job in the country.
What Tim Miles did in Nebraska was good, but let's be honest, it was mediocre. His results were mediocre. They weren't anything astounding. They were just okay.
You have to. That's fine, but you have to consider where the guy's doing.
And I give him credit. I think he's a great coach. And if he gets there down the road, I'll be the first one to say great job.
Just like the Bob Huggins one is mind-boggling.
It's odd. Yeah, but, I mean, back to where Hoiberg's going to be. 15, 16, we kind of agree.
Yeah, around there. I think that'd be fair. I think I wouldn't have a problem with they put him in the top 10. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah.
Fun little conversation.
I wouldn't put him in the top 10 yet. But
we'll see. All right, let's move on.
Okay.
Want to talk a little football now?
Let's do it.
Actually, before we move on, we already talked Cap City League. You think that my team would beat Bloom's.
Demolish.
The NBA Finals are coming up, and I don't want to take too much time on this. You're a huge NBA fan.
I am.
I'm like, whatever. Like, I'll watch the finals.
Yeah.
And I actually think this year's finals are very interesting because you've got – really, you got just two contrasting teams, really. You've got the Spurs, who are just boring. They don't say much. They don't do much. You've got the Heat, who constantly have all this attention around them because of obvious reasons. This is the one take, and again, our people don't want to listen to NBA talk. You don't tune into this podcast.
How do you know?
They don't. If they wanted to listen to the NBA, they'd listen to Bill Simmons and ES. They don't want to listen to a couple of hacks from Central Iowa act like they know what they're talking about because we don't know anything about the NBA. This is, no matter what, no, you don't, Greg. Compared to those other guys, you don't.
I didn't say anything.
I know it's hard for you to
fathom. I didn't even say anything.
I know you.
I didn't.
No, but I found this interesting. So, like, Tim Duncan the other day makes a comment. What did he say? He goes, we're going to win. Like,
he said, we'll be ready this time. That's all he said? That's all he said.
Okay, because that ruined my point because I didn't really look it up. I think Murph and Andy were talking about it yesterday, and I'm like, dude, Tim Duncan's never said anything in his life. Like, why would he choose to open his mouth now? But apparently he didn't do that.
He really did. But for Tim Duncan, that's Tim Duncan's version of opening his mouth.
So LeBron hasn't tweeted in like 40 days or something, and then he comes out and starts like talking smack on Twitter. Yesterday?
If he did, I missed it. I don't follow LeBron James. I'm not a big LeBron James fan.
I know, but it was big news. Like, a bunch of people were talking about it.
I thought all LeBron said back is, we'll be ready, too, or something like, we're ready as well, or something along those lines. Like, if this is what constitutes trash talking these days, it's...
Yeah, that's weak, man.
To me, it just seems like the media is just trying to drive up stories right now.
Well, the fact that LeBron felt the need to respond is what I found interesting. Because you've got, I mean, on the surface here, you've got a guy who... LeBron can win, you know, he could win a three-peat here.
Yeah.
But, like, when you mention his name, a lot of people are just automatically going to think of the decision, right?
Yep.
Because that's what he's kind of – and then you got a guy in Tim Duncan who's known for just being chill, doesn't say much, just really, you know, does it the right way. And they're just kind of colliding here. I think that's why it makes it interesting. But that ruins my day, though, because I was really hoping Tim Duncan was running his mouth.
Yeah, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I missed something, but I did not think it seemed like he was running his mouth.
Who do you think will win?
You know what? I want to get back. You're not the only one, but you say that San Antonio is a boring team.
They are boring.
are they boring?
They're boring because they how I just described.
Oh, vocally, as far as out in the media, they're boring. Not how they play.
No, I'm not saying how they play. Okay. I'm saying just the perception of the San Antonio Spurs. It's a lot like the Patriots.
Patriots, exactly like the Patriots. And the Patriots go out and they score tons of points on offense, and they're fun to watch. But
I like the Patriots. I think Tom Brady's fascinating. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I just love people who are great.
Yeah.
I appreciate greatness. And that's why I appreciate Tim Duncan. He's boring to me, but I like greatness. I love LeBron because of greatness. Tiger Woods, Jimmy Johnson. There's, you know what I mean? The list goes on. Tom Brady's the ultimate one.
The Cowboys football coach?
I knew a NASCAR dig was coming. You're too predictable these days, Greg.
I know. I got to switch it up a little bit.
Yeah. But no, I think the Heat will win in six, though.
Do you? You know, I want the Spurs to win. I'm not a huge Heat fan. I think it'll be an entertaining series, but I'm going to go Heat in six as well. I think the Spurs had their chance last year, obviously, and they let that game six slip. And
the Spurs did that crap against the Lakers back in the day too, you know, where they just let a game go and then it cost them a series. I mean, I remember that when I was a kid watching that.
If you actually look throughout the playoffs at how often that happens, I mean, look at the Clippers-Thunder series when the Clippers just absolutely choked away Game 5. Yeah. And then
it's over.
It's over.
You can't rebound from that.
Yeah. So I'll take, reluctantly, I'll take the Heat in six as well, but I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, well, the only reason I don't really care because I don't really like either team, but I'm all about protecting the Jordan legacy, selfishly.
Protecting the Jordan legacy?
I don't want LeBron to three-peat. Yeah, that's right.
Kobe and Shaq three-peated, did they not?
Yeah, but that was then. Kobe's not Michael Jordan. I think we all know that.
Oh, you're saying it's not about Kobe because he has a torn Achilles and he's been out for the last couple of years.
You know, Kobe had Shaq. And,
but LeBron's got nobody.
Hey, no,
but who's Dwayne Wade?
I will say this.
Who's Chris Bosh?
LeBron, and I got into a huge argument with a buddy of mine who's from Boston. He's a Celts fan, right?
Yeah.
So he hates LeBron.
Well, sure.
I
think more people than not hate LeBron.
I do too. But my buddy, there's not an objective bone in his body about LeBron James. He cannot have an objective conversation.
Is this Skip Bayless you're talking about?
Basically.
Okay.
No, but he can sit there and watch LeBron drop 50 and do amazing things with the basketball, and he's still gonna, you know. I mean, he's still just anti, like, this guy's overrated. Like, it's just not. He's a Bulls guy like me.
Yeah.
So he grew up the same generation, cheering for the same team. But my point is, though, you know, from a Bulls perspective, right?
Yeah.
From the lens that I'm viewing this through, I'd like to be objective. And as far as Jordan's legacy goes, LeBron does scare me. I never really got that from Kobe, and I love Kobe. Kobe's top three. Don't get me wrong. You know I love Kobe. But LeBron, like, I'm sitting there watching some of the things this guy does, and it does, I got a little bit of angst in the back of my head because of this guy.
He's a very, maybe not the right word to use, but he is a superstar, obviously. One of the best players of the generation. He doesn't have that flash, in my opinion, that like Jordan has, because he's such a solid basketball player. And I mean that as a compliment to LeBron.
Yeah.
Because he makes the right reads, the right passes, he rebounds, he steals. And he's just got such a well-rounded game that I don't think he has like that. There was times you watch Kobe and you'd watch Michael and you'd be like, oh my gosh, that was absolutely disgusting. I get it sometimes with LeBron. I don't get it as often. Because I don't know if it's just because he's so big and powerful and he just makes it look easier. Maybe that's it.
Well, the biggest thing I noticed about him, and then we got to wrap this up because we're going to lose listeners. But
we're not going to lose listeners. We're talking NBA.
Yeah, we will.
You talk like
they're tuning
wrestling
in
and you talk NASCAR.
When's the last time I talked NASCAR or wrestling on a Psycho and Fanatic podcast?
I had to listen to you and Bloom talk about your Florida vacation for 15 minutes once.
People wanted to know. we were getting questions about
nobody was asking you questions.
Oh, yeah. I can show you on Twitter.
Your mom doesn't count.
My biggest difference with LeBron, though, I just feel like at the beginning of his career when he was doing, I didn't feel like he made the guys around him better. I felt like you had a really good player, and then you had these guys floundering around him. But I feel like now, I truly think that he makes these guys around him better.
Oh, he absolutely
does.
That's
what made Jordan so great.
Yeah.
I mean, Luke Longley was a 2 on a scale of 1 to 10.
Yeah.
Jordan made him a 4.
Yeah.
Which was enough. You know, I mean, think of all those hacks that played in Chicago with Jordan. Now, sure, he had Pippen, but Pippen, what was he, a 7? Jordan made him a 9, or you know what I'm saying? Like any of those guys, John Pippen Paxson, was... Steve Kerr, he all of those guys elevated their games because of Jordan.
Absolutely.
And I'm seeing that with LeBron now, and that's what makes me think that this guy could, you know, when it's all said and done, he could be right up there with MJ and rings and MVPs and all that stuff.
He absolutely could. You know, it's tough for LeBron to ever be there too because the media seems to protect Jordan a little bit. That's just my take.
There's a lot of the media are guys my age and a little above
who grew up.
And as much as we want to be objective, you're a human being too.
Yeah. And you know what I love, and I'm going to come off sound like a LeBron apologist, is when people say, well, Jordan never lost in the NBA Finals. And LeBron's lost twice. To me, that's the biggest bunch of BS I've ever heard in my life.
And that's my point, Adam, where I get a little worried as a Jordan guy because Jordan himself couldn't have won those 6 titles.
No one can.
Exactly. And LeBron, you know, early in his career when he was losing in the NBA Finals, he wasn't elevating the game of the guys around him. They were just not a very good team.
I don't know. You look at that Cavaliers roster. He had to elevate it. They were terrible.
Okay, but not enough.
Not enough. You're right.
Not enough.
You're right. You're right.
Where my point is, I think Jordan lost in the Eastern Conference Finals to Detroit.
Exactly.
And I don't think he had developed that aspect of his game at that point in time. The only time he could get over the hump is when Pippen got to that level, Horace Grant got to that level, all those guys. And I feel like LeBron has figured that out now.
Yep.
And if he wins 3 here, I don't know where he's going, what he's doing, but I think wherever he goes, he's still really young. He's like our age. And
it's crazy.
That's contagious what he's – this is just my – listen, I'm not trying to be an NBA expert. I watch very few NBA games throughout the season. But I have there are a few teams that I do like to watch other than the Bulls. I like to watch the Thunder, and I always try and watch the Heat. I think the Heat are entertaining. I'm intrigued by them. And that's the thing I picked up on LeBron is that these guys all of a sudden they've clicked.
Yeah.
And it's not just like watching him when he played at Cleveland where it's one guy and 4 other dudes running around, kind of like Allen Iverson back in the day. You know, Iverson never got that. No. Those guys never – Theo Ratliff, Eric Snow, those guys were good, but they didn't go from a 5 to a 8. You know, they stayed at a 5.
But Iverson did take them to the NBA Finals.
Correct.
You got to give Iverson some credit there.
Give Iverson credit.
I would say took him to an 8. He didn't take him to a 10.
Okay, maybe they played a little better, but again, not enough.
Yeah.
Just like LeBron and those Cavs teams. So, I don't know. I'm intrigued.
It'll be a fun
series. For me to even bring up an NBA topic on this podcast, it must be intriguing.
It is.
At least it is to me.
And obviously now we got to wait to see Tony Parker. How healthy is he? He's obviously... The Heat don't have a guard that can stay with Tony Parker, so it'll be
intriguing.
Yeah, very intriguing.
Looking forward to it. All right, let's go college football now. I hold in my right hand a copy of the Lindy's College Football Preview Magazine. Do you buy these?
I do not.
Why? It's just outdated. I mean, what do you?
I know that you buy them, and then I'll just come over and steal them from you.
I buy every one of them, and I read every one of them cover to cover for the most. Now, like, I don't go individual. I'm not reading like the teams from the MAC previews in every magazine. Try and do that. I like the Athlon one. I'll try and read that one cover to cover. I like the articles though. My favorite part of it is like the hottest coordinators, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
I like that background information going into the season. Found Iowa State. This is what I found interesting from the Lindy's one. It's pretty basic. But they had Alan Lazard listed as their preseason Big 12 newcomer of the year. And then they listed – here, I'll just read you why. Which
Kemp.
I found a little bit – I'm like, did those guys just not do any research or – Or they just not, I mean,
let's be honest. It's a crapshoot when you're talking about incoming freshmen in college football.
Listen to why they wrote Alan Lazard, though. With lack of depth and aims, the tall receiver should be able to make an immediate impact for Iowa State. He is a very good route runner and has surprising speed for his size. Well, I agree.
What do you have issues with on that?
The lack of depth and aims part. The problem is he plays the deepest position at Iowa State.
Williams, go pull up our stats from 2013 on wide receiver
it's
position.
Different, though. You can't just do that.
You're
smarter than that.
No, but you can't kill them for that. They look at our stats, and our stats are terrible. If you go and you look at who we have returning at wide receiver,
my
and you're
point
them,
is this: I'm factoring not only what a depth chart looks at, what I've been told, people I've talked to, etc. And I've been told numerous times, Alan will play, probably play a lot. it's going to be really hard for this guy to crack the starting lineup. And I just, if he's the Big 12 newcomer of the year, and this is my point when I wrote about it, then Iowa State's probably in a bowl game.
That'd be awesome.
Do you agree with
me? I absolutely agree.
If he puts up the statistics to win that category,
yes.
Where you got to realize, I mean, he was the 7th ranked recruit in the Big 12. I mean, 6 guys are better than him in the eyes of this publication, which some of those are linemen, clearly.
Yeah.
But if he has that kind of a year, damn, I'll take that. Sign me up right now.
Absolutely.
I don't think
agreed.
He will. I think he's going to have a nice freshman year. Yeah. I don't think at the end of this season we're all going to be like, man, you know, second coming of Michael Irvin right here. And I don't believe that, but I think he's going to have a nice year, not great.
Here's their theory, and I'm guessing what their theory is. You have 6 guys that are better recruits, according to them, going to schools that have more talent than Iowa State.
Yeah.
So they might not be seeing the field as quickly. And if they do see it, they might see it in the line.
But how do you
line.
Pick an Iowa, any Iowa? My point is, go back to the 2013 stats. That's fine. But do you really believe that, like, how do you pick any Iowa State player on offense to win that award?
2 reasons.
How?
Two reasons. One Mangino. One Mangino.
I guess.
2, he's the highest rated recruit Iowa State's ever had at a wide receiver position where we've been terrible for the last decade.
Yeah.
I mean, I know
how does a wide receiver put up stats?
He's got to get the ball thrown to him.
So what is Lindy's right when they're writing about Iowa State and the bad quarterback?
Yeah,
that's my point. Like, that's just an awfully. My point is this: I'm not killing Lindy's because, and what you're saying makes sense. My point is for the fan base to expect that. Like, I don't.
Oh,
want,
yeah.
Like, dude, we need to like slow our roll here a little bit with Alan Lazard. Give the kid some time to breathe.
I agree. I don't agree that he will be that. I agree that with their logic, I can see why they have come to that conclusion.
I haven't looked around at the other Big 12 newcomers. To me, that when there's 5-star guys who are, you know, who are going to get opportunities elsewhere.
Sure.
That's a lofty expectation. I hope he gets it.
I would imagine if you go back and look at other years, they typically pick someone at a skill position. Would you agree? Because it seems
absolutely.
Those guys are always easier to kind of stand out a little bit.
Yeah. They're not going to come in and give it to an offensive lineman. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I'm more doing this not to protect Alan. I don't think it's healthy for the fan base to expect Big 12 newcomer of the year from this kid. If he's a running back, maybe.
Yeah.
He's a wide receiver who relies on a quarterback and an offensive line.
I know.
What are some questions for Iowa State on offense?
I hope Alan embraces it and just works for it. You know, because you could go one of 2 ways. You could feel the pressure and you could kind of wilt under the pressure. I hope he embraces it because he's going to have he's got high expectations. I mean, there's nothing he can do about it at this point.
Nope.
He's coming into Iowa State and fans are expecting him to play and do well from day one. So hopefully he embraces it and goes out and does it.
A couple other notes from the Lindy's magazine. EJ Bibbs, the 5th ranked tight end in the country.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'll buy that.
Sure. He looks a part. He's
see, that's a projection I get because this is a guy who,
but
we know he's going to line up as a receiver some too. My point, I think he steals a lot of catches this year from wide receivers on Iowa State's roster.
But, Chris, you just told me we don't know about the quarterback. We don't know about the
offensive
line.
No, but tight end's different.
Tight
end's different. The big security blank. Bibbs is experienced. He's been there. He's proven. Alan Lazard hasn't proven anything.
Yeah, but we're talking newcomer of the year. None of those guys have proven anything.
That's true. That's a good point.
So,
but still, Bibbs, though, he's proven it. He's proven that he can do this with this quarterback.
I agree with
him. Not system, but with this offensive line. And, okay, fine. None of those guys have proven it, but Bibbs is going up against every other tight end in the country to get a top 5 rank.
Yeah. That's exciting for Iowa State to have someone to get that kind of recognition. Hopefully it's something that the coaches can go out and recruit some other tight ends to come in here saying, hey, look what we can do for you.
Well, the good things generally happen when Iowa State has a legitimate tight end. I mean, if you look over the course of history.
Yeah, and last year was just a really bad break, too, with Bruns being injured.
Yeah,
because Bibbs, as good as he was, it took him till about halfway point of the year before he was ready to contribute.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Aaron Wimberly, 2nd team All-Big 12 running back, which, again, if that happens, watch out. Could be going to a bowl. Because I don't think Aaron Wimberly is a 2nd team All Big 12 running back. I think he potentially could, But I won't vote him there. I like Aaron Wimberly. I don't think he's going to get enough carries. I think him and Neely are going to split him about 50-50.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to use Wimberly the way they did the first month of that season. They killed him.
Yeah, they should.
He's too small.
And Neely's good enough and is short enough now that they should split carries.
Yeah, I mean, I like Aaron Wimberly. Don't get me wrong. He's not going to be able to put up the statistics to win that award.
They could split carries and he could still get 100 yards a game.
I hope so.
I mean, he could.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah.
Here's one I do agree with. Tom Farniok, second team All Big 12 center.
I agree with that.
I do like that.
Here you keep saying, too, that if this happens, we could be going to a bowl game. But all four positions, all on the offensive side of the ball.
Hey,
and that is.
But I'll go back to what I've been saying for a couple of months. In this conference, I'd rather be good on offense. You know, if you're going to pick your strength to be on one side of the football, I'd take it on offense any day.
Yeah, you're right.
They've been better on defense the last 5 years.
They got to stop somebody, too. With these high-powered offenses.
Okay, fine. But you've got to score.
Yeah, you do have to score.
In this league, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you have a good defense,
yeah,
you still got to score 30.
So you got four guys that are in the running for, you know, awards before the preseason. Is that enough to vault the offense from 23 points a game to 33?
No.
Is 33 points a game enough with what our defense is going
to
be?
If they average 33 points a game, they'll go to a bowl game.
With the way the defense is looking.
Yeah. Because I still think it's a Wally defense. I think he's going to turn them loose a little more. I still think they'll get some turnovers.
How many points per game did we give up last year?
Jeez.
I'm pulling it up right now.
I don't know. But the problem with the defense last year, though.
36. 110th in the country.
Well, but we're talking an average of 33 points a game compared to what did they have last year? 23?
24 and a half.
24? Yeah. Dude, that's a huge jump. That's a colossal. Because my thing is, if you're averaging that many more points per game, you're probably not going three and out as much. You're probably not turning it over as much. And that makes life a hell of a lot easier on your defense.
I completely agree with you.
So
I also think the defense is going to be a lot worse next year than it was last year.
A lot worse?
It might not show up statistically because of all the reasons you just pointed out.
Yeah, that's my thing. Like, that's why these numbers are a little deceiving.
Yeah, they are deceiving.
Because the defense wasn't good last year, but I don't think it was as bad as those numbers dictate either.
A little bit more inexperienced this year, a little less.
Yeah, but I was having this conversation with my wife while we were eating lunch today. And my wife doesn't know anything about football. But she does like to go to games.
You were just talking to her and she's just kind of pretending
she's
listening?
No, she actually asked me. She goes, what are you and Greg going to talk about on the podcast today? And I said, well, you know, the magazines are coming out, and we're going to talk about how they think Iowa State's going to do. And she, and this is a very Ashley-esque question, are we going to suck this year?
And what was your response?
Well, this is how I framed it. And I think this is important to remember as fall camp, as we go through fall camp. I go, well, I got good news and bad news. The bad news is it doesn't look like this defense is going to be it doesn't look like Iowa State's going to be able to stop many people. Very fair, right?
Fair.
The good news is that these are all guys who, you know, the recruiting has supposedly gotten better, right?
Right.
Nobody really knows what these guys are capable of, but the guys before them weren't exactly Lawrence Taylor either. So, who knows? You know, like, who knows what Kamari Cotton-Moye can do? You know what I mean?
Correct.
My point is, there is, you can't just say they suck if you haven't seen them play. So, we sit, kick your feet up. I would advise you to have lower expectations and hope they surprise you. That's how I would look at this defense.
Oh, once fall camp starts and you ask me my project, I'm probably going to go 9-3 because that's how it always goes.
Is that a fit? Yeah, no, I know.
And because all of a sudden you start hearing, oh, Wally Burnham's talking about how Cotton Moy has really made strides, and everyone gets excited, and you're like, you know, we're going to be better than we are. And people switch from 3-9 to 9-3.
Is that fair analysis of the defense, though?
What it
I
is.
Just spelled out?
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, I can't say TJ Mutcherson's not going to be any good.
I like TJ.
And I think a lot of the guys you're going to see on TJ, on defense, are like TJ in the sense that they are going to struggle being in the right spot. But when they are in the right spot, instead of batting down a pass, they could pick six. You know what I mean? That type of player. I think Nigel Tribune will have a great year.
Yep.
For his, it's going to be hard because I don't know what he's going to have opposite of him. I just, Sam Richardson, Ken Lynn, that's an important part of this football team that nobody really talks about, is those, one of those guys has to step up.
Absolutely. You really need both of them to step up.
You really do. You want like four or five guys to be able to play at corner, but they need a come to Jesus, Jeremy Reeves type year where all of a sudden you go from being a below average player to a good player. They need one of those years.
That's another position where you might see a freshman step up and play right away this year.
Yeah.
You very well could see a freshman play.
Well, you know, last year, Adam, Tribune played.
Yep.
And Cotton Moye would have played.
2 years ago. Or no.
No,
last year. Yeah, that's
if
right.
If he wouldn't have ripped his Achilles, he would have played.
Yeah.
Last year. So, I don't know. We'll see. I certainly hope that is going to be the case because they need some depth there. But the defense, again, I mean, just set your expectations low and let them surprise you because it really isn't. Like, we can sit here like a bunch of know-it-alls and say, wow, this defense is worse than the Big 12. You don't know that because you generally don't know who half these guys are. I mean, we've heard their names, but we don't know who they are as football players. That's generally not a good sign.
No, especially when they're very young.
You're in the Big 12. This isn't. Again, we'll go back to our basketball conversation. These aren't mid-majors we're talking about. You're in the I don't believe so. I think the SEC is better, but you're in arguably the best conference in college football. Generally, boys don't play well when they're mixed with men.
Correct.
But I'm not going to completely write them off either. I'll tell you one thing. The Brandon Jensen thing was the greatest news this program has gotten in a long time.
I agree. I was
just because he can hold a gap.
Yeah.
He can hold a gap. That's all I care about. Like, our Iowa State's defensive tackles are never going to be Ndamukong Suh-type numbers. You just need guys who will hold their gaps. And I think that Jensen and Cousin can do that.
Yes.
The guys behind them, I don't think that they can. But at least now you have two guys who you can trot out there.
And the other guys can just
hold a gap.
And the other guys can get some experience without having to be playing every single down.
Correct. So. We're talking Robbie Garcia, Pierre Aka, Vernell Trent. If those guys are your starters,
and
it's not even that they stink. They're defensive tackles who don't have any experience.
Did I read that Devron Moore is back in Ames, back on the team now?
Yeah, that's right.
That's another good news.
I don't think he'll play, though. I think he'll redshirt.
Oh, really?
Well, and the only reason I say that is, well, let's review what's gone down over the last, well, since he signed.
Yeah.
He signs with the team, picks Iowa State over some good programs. Everybody's really high. Was once quoted to me, pencil him in as your starter. Pencil. They didn't say pin it. So, yeah. But that you don't bring that guy in December to not start. Well, so then he gets like a week into spring ball, gets homesick all of a sudden, quits the team, goes home. Well, he didn't really quit the team. It was like a leave of absence is how I understood everything that went down there. Then decides, I'm coming back. It doesn't sound like he's going to be on scholarship immediately. I mean, just if you go through, and Yancey McKnight was the one who pointed this out to me, and I actually should go through and document it, but all the junior college prospects that Iowa State has brought in under the Paul Rhodes era, overwhelmingly the ones who come in the summer, redshirt.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Yancey McKnight's the one who pointed this out to me. I mean, this is not any editorialized. It's on record. I mean, that you remember that interview I did with
him? Yep.
You can go back and read that. So I just feel like the way things went down with him leaving in the middle of ball, it was not controversial, not at all, but it was a pain in Paul. It was a thorn in Paul's side, I'm sure.
And he's got to get the respect back from his teammates.
Yeah, like to me, this sets up like a perfect redshirt the kid, get him acclimated, you know, make him comfortable. It's for him more than anything.
Yep.
And he could be a damn good player for you.
Yeah.
For his last 2 years. The last thing you want to do is rush the kid back. He's not ready. He's not going to be good to go until six games through the season. You're wasting a year of a pretty good talent. To me, Devron Moore is not going to be the difference between Iowa State going to a bowl game or not. Just redshirt him. Earn his scholarship back. It's for the sake of the kid, too. You know? Let him earn his scholarship.
The only thing that I worry about that is who is our backup at safeties?
Does it matter?
Sure it matters. What if one of them gets hurt? Who would play?
Kamari Syrie.
Freshman.
You got two freshmen with Cotton Moya, Kamari Syrie. But Darian Cotton, TJ Mutcherson, those are your safeties.
Yeah. But he can't, right?
Well, and the Floyd, JUCO coming.
Oh,
in.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But by that, by what I understood, chances are Floyd would redshirt.
You can't. Yeah. I don't. I don't think
he will.
I'll be shocked.
That's a different scenario, though. The kid's coming in fresh.
Yeah.
Moore's got some baggage now, and I'm not. Listen, the young man was homesick. You know, I hope he figures it out. I hope he's happy. But that's baggage, though, when you leave your team in the middle of spring ball.
We've seen how. I mean, and we would have played 2 years ago in San Diego if we had a decent backup safety. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. I don't want to kill a kid's name, but there was a safety who was thrown in who was a walk-on who wasn't ready because we didn't have any backup safeties. Austin scores the big touchdown for West Virginia. What? We lose that game. We don't play in the Holiday Bowl in San Diego. So I don't care if this kid left, didn't leave, whatever. If the kid is good enough to play as a backup, you play him.
I will agree with that. I completely agree with that.
Okay.
But I have my questions if he's going to be ready. So my point is, don't wait. Because, listen, the forecast is mostly cloudy for 2014. If the forecast was mostly sunny, play the kid. It's partly cloudy, mostly cloudy, whatever you want to call it. He's not going to be the difference between 5 and 6 wins, in my opinion. Sure, maybe it could. But I also say,
it
I know.
Happened 2 years ago.
But there were also a lot of other things that happened. Jansen Watson was out in that game. Jake Knott was out in that game. You could say that about any of those three safeties. I believe that Darrell Givens was the safety who was out in that football game.
Correct.
So my point is, you plug any of those three in, I think Iowa State wins that game.
Absolutely.
So you can't just pin it on this one safety.
I'm just pinning that one play, is what I'm saying.
Okay. But there, which, come on.
It was the big play.
One play.
It was a big play.
I would guess that he redshirts, but nobody's told me that for real. I have no inside information there.
Okay.
I'm just kind of reading between the lines on the Yancey McKnight quote.
Yeah.
And he had nothing to do with Devron Moore. We were not talking about Devron Moore. We're just talking because we're actually talking about the JUCO defensive linemen. Now those guys, they're going
to
play
because they have to.
Yeah, and they're a better option than Virgil Trent at this point and Pierre, who don't have any experience. Listen, those guys, it doesn't mean they're going to stink. They don't have any experience. As Paul Rhodes always says, the closer you get to the football, the harder it is to play when you're a freshman.
Yes. And you just look at every freshman who has came in the summer, how long it takes them. Rodney Coe, what was it, 6, 7, 8 games in before it kind of started to click for that guy?
Yep.
Bibbs last year, same thing. So those guys coming in, I think they'll make an impact next year, but you probably won't see it till midway through conference season.
Man, I'd like to have Coe, Irving, and Charlie Rogers right about now.
I'd be predicting us to go to a bowl game. I really would.
Well, we both thought that, though, last year, Adam, if you remember.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, I mean, we both thought that this year would be a massive turnaround.
We hired Mangino. I'm like, we're golden.
You're going to have a great defensive line by Iowa State standards.
Yep. Oh, man, we'll time changed fast. Well, think about it. We would have had Bevins, too. Bevins left at the beginning.
Colin Bevins.
Yeah.
Quentin Pompey.
Whew.
That's my point, that they've been hammered at the same position routinely throughout the course of this program's history.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's a hard position.
It is.
That's why I say Brandon Jensen, man, that he's homegrown, man. You've had him for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, you're going to get his best work.
Yeah. I'm excited to have Brandon back.
Hmm?
I'm excited to have him back.
Oh, gotta be. All right. You got anything else? Otherwise we can wrap this thing up.
No, I think I'm good. Looking forward to Bloom's bachelor party on Saturday.
It's going to be just utter debauchery everywhere.
It is. I'm going to bring a camera. I'm going to take a lot of pictures. Maybe live tweet. Maybe should we have like a live streaming tweet off of what's going on? You know,
Bloom's a, believe it or not, a pretty private guy. I think we should probably.
That's a good point.
All right, buddy.
All right.
Well, we appreciate it and. Thanks for coming to the home office today. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Bloom will be back next week.
All right.
Just kind of going back and forth with you two during the summer months. Thanks for listening to the Mr. B Clothing Podcast, everybody. We appreciate it. Back next week with Brent Bloom. So long, everyone.
Go Cyclones.